Welcome to the Embassy Pod. I'm your host, Sambo, and together with the team at the U.S. Embassy Ulaanbaatar, we're pleased to present the fourth episode of our official podcast series in Mongolia. Through this series, we're bringing you conversations with the people in our embassy and the American community who live, study, or work here to share their stories. Our theme for this month's episode is culture, diversity, and inclusion. As you may know, May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month in the U.S., and we are celebrating the many contributions they made to the American culture and society throughout the month. We invite you to join us on social media to learn about the many accomplishments of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders. You can also visit our website for more resources like the fact sheet on President Biden's actions to advance safety, inclusion, and belonging for all Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander communities. Did you know there are over 300,000 Asian American, Native Hawaiian, and Pacific Islander American veterans who have served in the U.S. military? In this episode, we're excited to be able to sit down and talk with Lieutenant Colonel Philip Liu, the defense attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Mongolia. But as a public affairs staffer, I know him as this cheery guy in uniform who's constantly mistaken as a Mongolian and makes some amazing barbecue and builds kindergartens all over Mongolia. Colonel Liu, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Our audience might be wondering what a defense attaché at an embassy actually does, and I probably confuse them even more by mentioning the kindergartens. Can you describe what your job is? Are there defense attachés at most embassies?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So as a U.S. defense attaché, I serve as the senior representative for the U.S. military here in Mongolia. Every country around the world, minus a few, have a U.S. defense attaché that works at the U.S. embassy. My main responsibilities involve overseeing and supervising all of the U.S. military cooperation, training, and every effort that we do here in Mongolia for the United States and Mongolia military relationship. But we don't just do that. We also work with various ministries throughout the government of Mongolia. For example, we work with the education ministry to build kindergartens where they're most needed, like you mentioned before. And we also have worked with the health department, for example, to get personal protective equipment and testing kits for Mongolia's help to fight against COVID. And then we also work a lot with the National Emergency Management Agency to do things like disaster relief training exercises.
Awesome. And I understand you are a Vietnamese American, right? Can you tell us about your family's history and maybe your upbringing and how it shaped your career in the military?
Of course, I'd love to. You're correct. I am a Vietnamese American. I'd like to start off with the story of my parents, if I may. Both my parents are Vietnamese refugees from the Vietnam War that ended in 1975. My father was a South Vietnamese naval officer who did patrols on the Mekong River. And my mother's family worked for the U.S. Embassy that was in Saigon at the time. When Saigon fell in April 1975, both my mother and father had to flee for their lives because they had basically fought against the communists. And so to avoid jail, prison, and re-education camps and torture and murder, honestly, they fled for their lives. With the help of the United States military and the U.S. government, they were able to flee to refugee camps in Guam and Philippines, then Guam. And then finally over to the United States, where of all places, I'm not sure how they picked this place, but they got sent to a place called Fort Chaffee, Arkansas, which is in Northwest Arkansas. That was where a refugee camp was set up for the Vietnamese refugees. In Arkansas at the camp, that's where my parents met each other at work. They were working at a chicken processing plant, which is one of the jobs that the community had gotten for all the refugees there. And I'd like to take this moment here just to tell you a little about that community. You know, instead of turning away from all these refugees who were very, very different from the Americans living in that community at the time, the community did the exact opposite. They embraced all of the refugees that came there. Most of the refugees came there with nothing but the clothes on their backs and maybe an ID card or something if they were lucky. And the community really embraced them. They got them homes. They got them jobs. The community really came together. to take care of these refugees. And that's something that my father has always remembered. My father and mother had eventually three kids. And all of us eventually served in the military at one point or another. Back in 2005 and 6, we actually ended up in Iraq together, all three of us at the same military base. And although we were really, really happy about that, my mother was not very happy about that. So, but regardless, we grew up in Texas as a family of five. We all went to various colleges and went through various military programs. And like I said, we all three joined the military at different points in our lives. Currently, I'm the only one still serving in the military. Both my brothers have either retired or left the military long ago. But one thing that's impacted me the most about my family's history is, I mentioned it earlier before, is my parents fled to America. They didn't flee to anywhere else. They fled to America because they thought, they knew that America was the country that had the most opportunity for them, that could give them a restart on their life. They lost everything in the war, including most of their family members, their background, their history, their culture. But in America, they found a new opportunity, a new country that took them in. And even today, both of my parents are naturalized U.S. citizens. And when you ask them, what are they? They say, we're Americans, not Vietnamese Americans, not Vietnamese. They say, we are Americans. They're very happy in America now. But how this has impacted my military career is that as we were growing up, all three of my father's sons were taught that America was the country that gave us all a second chance, gave them a second chance. And although they're not wealthy or anything, multi-billionaires or anything, they're successful. They've got grandkids, they've got successful kids, and they've got their lives and freedom. And my father always taught us that the best thing that you can do for your country is serve it. And one of the ways that you can serve it is by fighting to defend it. And that's why all three of us brothers joined the military and ended up in Iraq at various points. We've got about seven different tours in Iraq between the three of us. But that's my family's history as Vietnamese Americans, very proud Vietnamese Americans. That's one of the reasons I'm sitting here talking to you as a military officer.
That is an amazing, inspiring story. I can see that our embassy and by the U.S. senior military officers that have visited, that the American military is quite diverse. In fact, I believe General Brown, who visited Mongolia, recently made history. Can you tell us about General Brown and how the diversity of American society is reflected in the leadership of the military?
Yeah, that's a great question. General Charles Brown used to serve as the Pacific Air Force commander. That's called the PACAF commander. He actually visited Mongolia back in 2019 as the PACAF commander. And just to give you a quick idea of what PACAF does is, it is the Air Force Command headquarters for all air forces in the Indo-Pacific region. And as the PACAF commander, he worked with Major General Enkbayar from the Air Force Command and all of the Mongolian Air Force staff to help the Air Force staff here build it, create a strong and capable Mongolian Air Force. Currently, General Brown was promoted after he finished his time at Pacific Air Force. He's now the Chief of Staff or the Air Force Chief for the entire U.S. Air Force. You could say that he is the highest ranking Air Force officer in the entire United States military, which is quite an achievement. Regarding your question about diversity of society, I don't know what the percentages are, but if you're correct, if you look at the military at all ranks, you've got people from all different types of backgrounds, races, religions, and everything. The great thing about our U.S. military is that we don't discriminate on the basis of your color of your skin or what religion you are. It's about performance. And that's the one thing I'd like to highlight is if you look at our higher ranking officers, there's quite a bit of diversity, starting with General Charles Brown. He's African American. And then I'd like to just point out two more people. It's the first one is the new Southern Command commander is the first four-star female general to be in charge of a major combatant command. So when I say Southern Command commander, that's Southcom. That's basically all of Latin America as well as South America. She's in charge of all U.S. military operations on that continent plus some. And then my hero is actually a man named Lieutenant General Hooper, who's now retired. He is the highest ranking foreign area officer for the U.S. Army when he was serving. But I had a chance to meet him when the Secretary of Defense, Secretary Esper, visited back in August 2019. Lieutenant General Hooper came along, and I remember that I was quite nervous because I was just new to the job, and General Hooper asked about 50 questions a minute, all of which I had to answer correctly. But the fact that I'm here means that he didn't fire me, so I'm very happy to still be here. And the last thing I'd like to end off with talking about diversity in the military is that I'm very proud to serve in this military because the U.S. military focuses its promotions and you're judged on several things. The first one is it's merit-based, meaning that your performance and your experience really determine where you're going and how far you can reach. If you perform well, you'll continue to progress. If you fail to perform, you'll be moved out of the military eventually. That's all I have to say about that.
Thanks so much. That was very informative and very inspirational to know. I'd like to touch on something that's very near and dear to my heart. I know we've been out to the airport together many times before, often at late at night in the middle of the winter, to either yes. say farewell to Mongolian troops deploying or to welcome them home. So you've met a lot of Mongolian military and peacekeepers. What is your impression of them? I've seen Mongolian peacekeepers in the news recently.
Yeah, that's a great question. I do remember all the trips out to the airport in the middle of the night, standing there with negative 40 degrees Celsius and very windy. And I was never able to wear a glove because when you shake a soldier's hand, when you shake anybody's hand, you have to take the glove off. And so I was always afraid that my hand would fall off. But I always told myself, these guys are going to Afghanistan or South Sudan. The least I could do is freeze my hand off. It's very little to ask. But regarding my impression of the military, I'd like to actually start off with a story from very long ago. It was in 2005 when I was on my third tour in the Middle East, in Iraq at this time. And the year before, there was a very, very famous incident. I don't remember all the, I think it was Camp Echo or Charlie. Regardless, in 2004, I had heard an incident where two Mongolian sharpshooters neutralized and took out it wasn't even a car bomb. It wasn't even a truck bomb. It was a dump truck bomb. I don't remember the amount of explosives in it, but it would have really destroyed the base. But I remember hearing stories, even though I wasn't in Iraq in 2004, I came back in 2005. I remember the story of these two very brave Mongolian peacekeepers preventing that dump truck bomb from driving into the base, which housed thousands of international soldiers. And instead of driving into the base, because of their heroic actions, the car bomb blew up very far away from the base. And unfortunately, even that far away, it was so powerful that it actually killed several people. But the greatest thing was that those two Mongolians, very brave Mongolians, kept that car bomb from killing hundreds, if not thousands more. And so that's one of the first stories I heard about Mongolians. The second story that I heard about Mongolians was while I was in Iraq. The Mongolians, in times of combat, in times of a firefight being when you're getting shot at or somebody's attacking you, instead of running away like a lot of other militaries do, frankly, the Mongolians, what I say is the Mongolians marched to the sound of gunfire. They marched towards it. They ran into the fight to fight because that's what they were there for. And that's what the Mongolians' reputation is, and it precedes them. And I'm very happy to be here in Mongolia now after hearing all those stories. I can't believe I'm here in Mongolia visiting the same units that were sent to Iraq back in the day. And so I think that's a really good connection I have with them. I'm very proud to be here. And I hope to meet those two Mongolian heroes someday. I think they might be retired, but I do know that they go back to the United States a lot to give speeches and things. I know they met President Bush as well. And I'm quite jealous about that because I'm from Texas. He's from Texas, but yet I still haven't met either of the presidents, President Bush's. The other thing I'd like to say about the Mongolian military's reputation and my impression is even though the Mongolian military is a very small military, relatively speaking, the Mongolian military sends a huge proportion of that military into danger zones, Afghanistan, Iraq, South Sudan, name six other places in Africa that the military has gone for peacekeeping operations. And that's something that's very well noted across the world, is small military, but extremely capable and extremely willing to send their soldiers to do Mongolia's part to keep international peace and stability. And I think that's a very important reputation for Mongolia to have, not just the military, but Mongolia as a country, that Mongolia's people and government and citizens are willing to put up with that type of sacrifice for the good of the world. So the reputation precedes you, and it's an outstanding reputation. And like you said, I've also seen the Mongolian peacekeepers in the news recently, and they were all great stories. Most recent story was South Sudan with protecting UN peacekeepers from a mob of civilians that were attacking them. And then before that was an incident where the peacekeepers in Afghanistan saved Afghan soldiers from an attack. So when I read those, I was very proud of them. But then in the back of my head, I said, of course they'd do that. That's what they're known for. That's what they do. There's no surprise from us, but that doesn't mean that we can't all still be proud of them. I have a saying, you never know somebody until they're in a firefight or when they're in danger. And I think each of these examples proves that whenever Mongolians are placed in danger, they're going to do the right thing. They're going to fight. They're going to protect other people. So it's an outstanding reputation.
As a Mongolian, hearing you say that makes me very proud. And also, whenever I accompany you and the ambassador to the airports, one of the things they always appreciate you say is you thank the families of the troops for supporting them and making that sacrifice for them. And that always is very inspirational and heartfelt. So I appreciate you saying good things about them.
Yeah,
President
of course.
Biden, please go
ahead. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad you brought that up because it really is heartfelt. I can't tell you how many times I've looked in the rearview mirror of the bus or through the back window of a bus that's taking me to an airport to fly me over to Iraq and watching, you know, my wife and kids kind of grow smaller in the distance. So the people serving in the military, that's just one part. That's what the part you see. The part that most people don't see is the families. You know, they leave behind husbands, wives, kids, mothers, fathers that have to support the soldier who's deployed. And they're just as important. And so we always make it a point to say thank you to the families because it's sometimes harder on them than it is on us because we know what's coming. We know what's coming. We're going into the danger zone. Sometimes our wives and our families that stay behind, they don't know. And sometimes not knowing is even more scary than knowing what's coming.
President Biden recently announced the final withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. Can you tell us about that decision and what it means for Mongolian peacekeepers in Mongolia?
Of course, yeah. That was big news this year for everybody. As you know, Afghanistan has been, the war in Afghanistan has been going on for many years, since 2001. And although I've never been to Afghanistan, I've only been to Iraq, I've never been to Afghanistan. I can tell you that the U.S. President, President Biden and his administration and his generals, it was a very tough decision for them. It was not taken lightly. I can tell you that this decision was taken after serious and in-depth studies of the situation and in consultation with all of our allies and partners in NATO before we made that decision. And the Mongolian military has been there since 2003. And so I'd like to take this opportunity to tell the military, the Mongolian military, thank you from the United States military and Department of Defense for standing by us for so long. It was a dangerous place, but we were always... we were always confident that Mongolia would have our back and have the backs of all of our allies and partners over there. Like I said, since 2003, Mongolia has been there. And right now, because of President Biden's decision, we are actively, the U.S. Embassy is actively assisting the military. There's two military companies over there, over 200 soldiers in two locations that we are helping to bring home to Mongolia. And the great thing also I'd like to point out is that we're also making sure that they come home vaccinated as we're going to vaccinate them in Afghanistan. What this means for Mongolia is that it ends a very, very long and very, very proud period, their military history. And I'm personally very proud to be here for not only seeing and helping all those Mongolian soldiers go to Afghanistan since 2019, but here in 2021 to be the one that helps them come out of Afghanistan and bring everybody home. It's a watershed. It's a very important moment, and I'm very proud to be here to help the military do that. And what I hope this means is that I hope that the military is able to, number one, rest up and reward the soldiers who've served so long in Afghanistan. But I would also like to see the military, and I would also like to help the military while I'm here, translate all of that experience that they learned in Afghanistan and translate into even more peacekeeping operations. And like I said, it's very Mongolia's peacekeeping contributions are phenomenal. It's extremely noteworthy. And so what I hope to see is that this enables Mongolia's military to contribute even more to UN peacekeeping operations and once again reinforce their outstanding reputation in the international community.
Have you seen much of Mongolia before COVID through your work travels? Do you have any particular favorite places or memories?
Oh, yes. I have bounced across Mongolia in a land cruiser for many, many hours and many, many thousands of kilometers. And I love seeing it all. I love getting out of the city and seeing all of Mongolia. I love to travel. I think my favorite places are all tied to the U.S. kindergartens that the embassy helped design and build with the help of the Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Last year alone, we opened four, which was phenomenal. It was a great experience. And I was able to travel to most of those. We opened one in Seleng, IMAG, in Sukhbar City. We opened one in Dornogov Province in Sanshan City. We opened one in Uvs Province. And then we opened one in the town of Bichikt. I was able to go to Seleng, Dornogov, and Uvs. And each of these provinces is beautiful in its own way. But I think of those that I just named, I think Seleng and Uvs were my favorite just because of all the scenery and all the mountains, the forests and the rivers, and seeing all the animals, all the greenery was very, very nice to see. And I think on one of those trips, I swam in every single body of water I came across. So I swam in the Seleng River. I swam in the Uvs. I swam in Uvs Lake. And I swam in a couple of other lakes on the trip. Any lake that the ambassador would allowed me to jump in and swim around, and I did. He thought I was crazy. I think one of my favorite memories, it's actually kind of embarrassing, but as you know, I'm studying Mongolian. I'm trying to study Mongolian. It's so difficult for me. But on one of my trips, I was in Omnogov, IMAG, and I was eating dinner with the unit commander of 7780, who was working on the branch of the Tavan Tolgoi Railroad. That evening, he made me a dinner of Omnogov lamb. And I wanted to show off my Mongolian skills. And I said, Koranda, bi Omnogov hunimak mash ik dortai. And everybody who was eating there stopped eating and stared at me as if I was crazy. But then my driver, Oyunbold, leaned over and whispered in my ear, sir, it's Hon Ni Mak. And I said, what did I say? He's like, sir, you said, I like to eat Omnogov human meat the most.
Right.
And so I remember that as being very, very funny. But I actually really do like Omnogov Hon Ni Mak. It tastes wonderful. It tastes like great beef. So
That's an amazing
my
story.
Favorite most memorable story.
Right, for sure. Can't blame you for that. Speaking of meat, one of our most popular videos last year was actually with you and your team showing us how to cook authentic American barbecue. And there are two things that I learned from that video. One, there are many different kinds of barbecue. And two, Americans can get quite passionate when it comes to the great debate of what the best style of barbecue is. I actually vividly remember that one of our diplomats insisted Kansas City style is actually the best. Is she right?
That's a tough question. And it's hard because now I have to go on the record. So I'm going to do what some politicians do is is I'm just going to talk a lot and try not to answer the question. But actually, the Kansas City barbecue is quite delicious. And she is right, because her style of barbecue is delicious. I think the great thing about barbecue and food is it whatever is good is so subjective. It depends on who you are and how you grew up and what your experiences are. If you have had very little experiences, or say you haven't had a chance to travel very much, maybe you think that, you know, Kansas City style barbecue is the best if you're only stuck in Kansas City. But I would say that if, you know, if you were lucky enough to come to Texas and actually eat, you know, the America's best barbecue in Texas, if you had a chance to do that, then maybe you would say that based on my experiences, Texas barbecue is much better than Kansas City style barbecue. But that's kind of that's my way of answering that. And just to say that Texas style barbecue is the best barbecue style. But in reality, like all Mongolians who love meat so much, I think the greatest thing about, let's just say, barbecue in America is that there are so many styles. And like I said, it's based on what you think is good for you. You have that freedom to choose. You know, you can make your ribs any way. You know, you can make your Gahin Mak or your Ukrin Mak any way you want. And the greatest thing is, you know, the ability to travel around and eat so freely and taste all types of barbecue. And while I have while we're talking about barbecue is, as you know, I'm from Texas. I grew up in Texas. I was born in Arkansas, but raised in Texas. So I consider myself a Texan. One of the hallmarks of Texas barbecue is we don't use too much sauce. When we're cooking it, we cook it low and slow for many hours over some, you know, low heat. But we also use what we call dry rub. It's basically just a mixture of seasoning, salt, pepper, garlic powder, so types of cayenne peppers and things like that. But when my wife and I found out that we were going to Mongolia, I said, oh, this is going to be great because I know they love meat, but I'm going to bring all of my spices with me in my luggage. And then I'm going, every single time I cook for a Mongolian guest, I'm going to use those spices and I'm going to cook for them. And so I think I brought about 15 pounds or about 7 kilograms. Wow. In my luggage of nothing but dry spices, dry rubs and spices to cook with. And one of my goals is to teach and let Mongolians who eat my food experience what Texas barbecue and Texas cooking is like. And so, yeah, I love to cook for everybody.
Wow, that's a great story. I was actually honestly expecting a very diplomatic answer, but I appreciate you being truthful about your Texas barbecue styles. So have you had the chance to use from your spice? How much do you have left from the 7 kilograms?
I've got about 3 kilograms left.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you used a lot.
I've been cooking a lot. Yeah, I've been cooking a lot.
Awesome. May I ask you about your other interests besides cooking? I think your love for motorcycles is well documented with your Harley Davidson t-shirts. And I even know that you've brought your Harley to Mongolia. How long have you ridden motorcycles? Were you able to do any rides in Mongolia? Is there a motorcycle scene here?
Yeah, you're right. I think we started off the cooking video you mentioned with me standing next to my motorcycle.
Right.
But yes, I've been riding things with two wheels and a motor since I was 12 years old. I wouldn't call it a motorcycle that I rode back then. It was basically my father's very, very old 1979 Honda moped. I think it was a 50cc moped. It looked quite funny, but we fixed it up. I helped my uncle fix it up when I was 12. And then when nobody was looking, I would start it up and hop on the road in my neighborhood and drive it around, which was illegal because I was only 12. And, you know, I did some really dumb things back then. So I'd like to take this opportunity to tell everybody that, number one, go to a motorcycle safety course so that you know how to ride your motorcycle. And number two, make sure you wear all the protective equipment that you need, because when you fall off a motorcycle that's going very fast, it hurts and you can really hurt yourself. And so do it legally and do it safely. That's my recommendation to everybody who's listening. But like I said, ever since I was 12 years old, I've been on a motorcycle of some sort. But I've always loved Harley Davidsons. I love the look of the classic cruiser bike. And they honestly make very good motorcycles. They're beautiful. They look like works of art. If you ever see one, a Harley Davidson in the sunlight, and you look at the paint job and the curves, it's a beautiful machine. I love the feel of the bike riding it as well. And I love the freedom because they're quite powerful bikes. They're very torquey, even though they're not high horsepower like a Ducati or a Suzuki. I love the freedom of being on a motorcycle like that and just puttering around, not having to pedal or anything. So it's quite a fun experience. And the motorcycle I brought to Mongolia is a very old one. It's a 1996 Harley-Davidson Fat Boy. It's the same motorcycle that Arnold Schwarzenegger rode in his movie Terminator.
Oh, really?
Wow. It is, yeah. He rode a black one back then. I think that was back in 1991. It's actually quite funny looking. If you don't know what a motorcycles look like, I've got very high ape hangers. Ape hangers are the handlebars. But one of my friends called me the 5 foot Asian with the 6 foot ape hangers, which isn't too far from the truth. But anyways, if you see an orange Harley Davidson with ape hangers on the streets of UB or out in Mongolia, please say hi. And if you don't say hi, then at least don't hit me. So thank you for that. You asked about the motorcycle scene. I'm actually very happy to tell you that the ambassador, the U.S. Embassy, and I have started a relationship, a very friendly relationship with the Hunu Motorcycle Club of Mongolia and many of their members. Their president is Boltko. He is actually the main star or the speaker for a Mongolian television travel station here. But his passion is motorcycles. I think he has two or three. His wife rides one as well. And I'm very excited. We are the U.S. Embassy is very excited to partner with Boltko and the Hunu Motorcycle Club. We're very happy that they're one of our new friends and partners. We're very excited about a lot of their new ideas about bringing other types of motorcycles into Mongolia and increasing the amount of motorcycle or adventure tourism that happens here in Mongolia. As you know, Mongolia's got amazing scenery and a lot of adventure that can be had, whether it's on a Harley Davidson or it's on an enduro dual sport bike. I dream of the day that I can take a BMW dual sport bike from UB and all around Mongolia through every single province. But I think that's what the Hunu Motorcycle Club wants to do, is bring more tourists here to experience Mongolia from the back of a motorcycle, kind of like riding a horse, but you just feed it gas instead of feeding it grass.
That's a nice way to put it.
That's the motorcycle scene here as I know it. I know there's several motorcycle groups, but the one thing I think is the most coolest thing about the Hunu Motorcycle Group is some of their members are featured in the rock band The Who's, a rock music video for the song Wolf Totem. So if you watch the video, you know that they ride across the steppe on a bunch of motorcycles, but some of those motorcyclists came from the Hunu Motorcycle Club, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Wow, that's really cool. And I can tell you're very passionate about the motorcycles. I think is one of the first thing that comes to mind is the interesting collaboration between the embassy and the motorcycle club. I think that's not the first thing that people think of when you think about, you know, the embassy's collaboration with the Mongolian community. But that's very exciting and interesting.
Yeah, it's great. I never thought that I would see Ambassador Kolchevsky sitting there in a motorcycle vest or looking like a biker. He looks pretty good. And I think the first time he's ever ridden a Harley in Mongolia was because Hunu Motorcycle Club gave him a motorcycle jacket and then put him on the back of their motorcycle and cruised around a bit. But I know there's some pretty cool photos of him floating around on Facebook, on the embassy Facebook. So,
right. And thanks for the shout out. So it is the Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, after all. And you mentioned all the important figures in the military who play a big role. But I would like to ask you about your personal inspiration and someone who've inspired and motivated you the most.
Sure, I'd love to answer that. There's a lot of inspiration I've had over the years. But I think my lifelong inspiration and source of motivation is my father. And I told you a little bit about his story, but just a little bit more about him. Before the Vietnam War started, his family was very wealthy in South Vietnam. They did a lot of business with the colonial French, insurance companies, real estates, and automobiles. And one of the first pictures I remember seeing of my dad is have him standing in front of like a fleet of French cars. They were called Citroens or something like that. And there was one standing in front of this really fancy one. I was like, who's that? And what's that? And he's like, oh, that's me in front of a Rolls Royce. And I was like, wow, weird name for a car, but whatever. But yeah, my father came from a very wealthy background in Vietnam. But because of the geopolitical circumstances, the way the world was back then, and because the war started, he and his entire family fought against the communists, the North Vietnamese. And of course, everybody knows that the South had lost that war in 1975. As you know, my dad fled over here. He actually was on an old PT-109 boat. And if you don't know what that is, that's a World War II era boat that John F. Kennedy, U.S. President, former U.S. President John F. Kennedy used during World War II. Basically torpedo boats. He used those to patrol the Mekong River. And when he found out, when they were told that they needed to flee for their lives, they ended up just turning around, floating out into the Gulf and getting picked up by a U.S. A battleship or a destroyer. Came to America with absolutely nothing. He started over from scratch, literally. He says he was very happy that he was able to survive, period. He had no wealth. He didn't even have his educational background. He was top of his class as a graduate of the South Vietnamese Military Academy in Da Lat in the Central Highlands. A very prestigious academy is modeled after the United States West Point, as a matter of fact. What I'm trying to get at is that he came to America and he had lost everything. And instead of, say, crawling into a bottle or, you know, getting high on drugs or anything like that, he put his mind straight back to the task of rebuilding his life. You know, he married, he built a family. And although he didn't have any of his degrees from his education from the military academy in Vietnam, you know, he went back to school. And of course, by that time, he'd already had three kids. And so very difficult to get a bachelor's degree and raise three kids in the 1980s. And so he ended up becoming an automotive mechanic, which is where I get my love for engines. I love engines. I don't like the car. You can give me a Ferrari. I'd rather take the engine any day and open it up and see how it works, which is probably a bunch of Italians out there are probably crying right now because I said that, but I'm sorry. But anyways, my father ended up he started off at the top in terms of wealth and prestige. And then here he is in America as an auto mechanic working the night shift, sometimes two shifts, you know, coming home covered in grease, his hands all cut up, exhausted. But he never gave up. He kept going at it. And he's retired now. He's quite comfortable and very happy. But I look at his life and I tell myself, man, if I had to start my life over at the age of 35, could I do that? Especially coming from a background like that? Man, and I don't know. I hope I would. But I know that I know somebody has, my dad has, and it goes back to, you know, America and the freedoms that we enjoy in America. And everybody says that the American dream is dead or dying. But if you ask my dad, if you ask me, I would say that the American dream is pretty strong and alive. You know, we have our struggles. You know, if you watch the news lately, yeah, there's some troubles back in the United States, very troubling stuff. But I always tell everybody that asks, like, hey, man, what's going on in the United States? You guys are on the downhill. I say, nah, it's, you know, we have our troubles. But the greatest thing about us is that we don't hide our troubles. We face them. We publicize them. We put them in newspapers. We make movies about them. We put them in our songs, for God's sake. You listen to some rap music these days. It's all about America's problems. But we don't hide it. We're not afraid of it. We'll face them down. We'll solve them. Using the will of the people and government processes. It's democracy. It ain't perfect, but it's the best system out there. It's kind of messy. It's a little volatile at times, but I still believe that our system as a democracy is the greatest system there is. And that's why I'm also very proud to be here in Mongolia and working to help the Mongolian government. It's a shining democracy. Mongolia and Mongolians are setting the example for the entire region. And I'm very proud of that. And I think Mongolia should be very proud of that as well.
Thank you for that.
That's a long answer. That's a long answer. You're a very short question, but sorry.
I don't have much to say besides thanking you for what you've said. And it's obvious that you're a very great storyteller, but your story and your forward-looking attitude is very inspirational for me. I think optimism is something that we desperately need at these times, especially. And I thank you for that. If I were to ask you what your proudest moment as the defense attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Ulaanbaatar, what would be?
Oh, that's a tough one. We've had so much success here. And, you know, the U.S. Embassy is very small, but we do so much here, and I'm very proud of that. And I know Ambassador Kolchesky and his entire team and everybody here at the embassy, we're very proud to be here. We're proud to work here. We rack up consistent wins for Mongolia. Mongolia is a great partner to work with. But if I really had to put pin on it, I would say that opening the kindergartens last year was probably my biggest wow and proud moment for me. As you know, we opened several kindergartens. I was able to go to three of them. But my favorite part of opening those kindergartens was not all the food that they made for us, which was delicious, by the way. I love to eat, if you haven't figured that out yet. But my favorite part was actually looking around and seeing this brand new kindergarten, which was amazing, beautiful kindergarten. But just looking around and seeing how happy and proud the town or the cities or the Sooms parents and kids were, and the teachers and the headmistress out there wearing their beautiful dells and showing off their new school and showing off their neighborhood, showing off, introducing all of us to the parents, to the teachers. I think that seeing the parents and the kids and the teachers beaming proud about their new school and the fact that they would be able to teach a lot more kids in areas that really needed these schools. And they were so happy, and it things like that really make me happy. And I look around and say, we're making a great impact here, and I'm very proud of that. Of that group, I really enjoyed the most hanging out with the kids and sitting in their little mini chairs and at their little short desks and coloring with them and reading books that I didn't understand in Mongolian and having them make fun of me or, kind of try to rip my ribbons off my uniform and things like that. But just hanging out with the kids really rejuvenates me and kind of, tells me all I need to know about why we're here. Doing what we do at the embassy. It's to help Mongolia. And what better way to help Mongolia than to help Mongolian children grow up with a good school and a good education.
Awesome. We actually have some amazing photos of you playing with the children at the kindergarten opening. I should send you that. Unfortunately, this is the end of our conversation. I think our conversation had everything that we could ever wish from our guests, from being inspiration to being funny and to great stories. But we have a tradition of our podcast where we wrap things up with a rapid fire segment where you have to answer simple questions as fast as you can. So we have only one rule. You have to go with the first thought that comes to your mind. Ready?
Yeah, sure. I'm ready.
Okay. favorite Mongolian dish?
Bi omnogovin khani mak mashik dortai.
Awesome. Favorite kind of music?
Taylor Swift.
Oh, go to karaoke song.
Taylor Swift.
Coffee or sutete?
Oh, coffee with whiskey, please.
Oh, favorite book?
Green Eggs and Ham by Dr. Seuss.
Nice. Favorite movie of all time?
Oh, you're going to laugh at this, but Legends of the Fall with Brad Pitt. Seriously, my favorite movie.
I remember that. Ah, favorite proverb?
This one goes out to Major General Amgalan Batar of the Land Forces Command in Zunmad, Tuv Province. My favorite proverb is acta non verba, which is Latin for actions, not words.
How many languages do you speak?
I speak three, and I'm trying to learn Mongolian.
Name three places on your Mongolian bucket list.
Number one, Uvs Lake, actually to swim across Uvs Lake. Number two, on top of Hovsgol Lake in a boat. And number three, anywhere on my motorcycle in Mongolia.
Favorite sport and athlete?
Basketball, LeBron James.
The most famous Mongolian you've met?
Oh, this is easy. General Gurakcha is Mongolia's cosmonaut. I got to meet him and he gave me a tour of his museum, the Space Museum.
Awesome. First thing you'll do once the pandemic is over?
Oh, that's a tough one too. I think my wife would be angry if I said that I didn't want to go home. The first thing I want to do is go home to the United States to hold my first granddaughter, who was just born 2 days ago on the 4th of May.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Her name is Eden Grace Baker. And I'm very proud of that. But actually, what I really want is, I said that to make my wife happy. She's probably listening to this. But actually, what I wanted to say, the first thing I want to do is to fly off to some place like Vietnam and eat lots of pho. But yeah, we'll go with the first one. Go home, hold my granddaughter, just to make me, just to make my wife happy.
Right. And thanks for following the rules of going with the first thing that comes to your mind. I hope you will meet your granddaughter. And thank you so much for accepting our invitation and being on guest on our podcast.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Awesome. I'd like to give a huge thanks to Colonel Liu for agreeing to be our guest. Now let's hear from some of our friends and colleagues on a segment we call The Best News. For all of us at the embassy, our best news is that we are presented by these amazing Asian Americans. Let's meet some.
Hello, my name is Aloysa Klicheski. I am the wife of the ambassador of the United States to Mongolia, Michael, and mother of three Asian American children. In my embassy career, I have worked in Russia, Poland, Kazakhstan, the Philippines, and Switzerland. As a Filipina-American, I am proud of the rich history and many contributions Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders have made in the United States and around the world. The first Asians documented in the Americas were Filipinos who arrived in California in 1587. And ever since, Filipino-Americans have contributed much to American culture and society, most recently Bobby Lopez, the songwriter known for the music of the movie Frozen. He is the only person ever to have won the Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony Awards twice. I am also proud that the work of another prominent Asian American, the artist Nam June Paik, is part of the Art in Embassy's collection here at our residence in Mongolia. Nam June Paik is known as the father of video art, and his electronic superhighway installation is one of the most popular works at the Smithsonian American Art Museum. It is my pleasure to help celebrate the AAPI community and thank them for their service while representing our country abroad.
Hello, my name is Margaret May. With my husband, I have served in Italy, China, and now Mongolia on the occasion of Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month. As a Taiwanese American, I am proud to help celebrate the achievements of people like NBA star Jeremy Lin, actress Constance Wu, and tech entrepreneur and co-founder of YouTube, Stephen Chen. Over 40 years ago, the President of the United States, Jimmy Carter, declared May as a time to recognize the contributions and influence of Asian Americans and Pacific Islander Americans to the history, cultural, and achievements of the United States. Asian Americans are an integral part of the cultural and identity of the United States, and I am proud to represent them in Mongolia. Happy AAPI Heritage Month.
Hi, I'm Brian Green. I serve in the U.S. Embassy Civil Military Support Element. This is my fourth visit to Mongolia, and I'm happy to be back. The Civil Military Support Element works with local partners on building kindergartens in Mongolia and helps Mongolian first responders prepare and respond to natural disasters. I'm proud of all that Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders contribute to our nation, and I'm proud to represent my country and my community in Mongolia.
Hi, I'm Sanghan Bei. I also go by Ken. I'm the team medic for the U.S. Embassy Civil Military Support Element and help provide medical and first responder training to our rescue, public health, and security partners in Mongolia. As a Korean American, I'm proud to represent my country in Mongolia, and I'm so happy there are so many good Korean restaurants and spas here.
Sanba Tano, I'm Tanzing Tagang. I'm a sergeant in the United States Marine Corps. U.S. Marine security guards work closely with the Department of State at embassies and consulates around the world to protect and safeguard U.S. citizens and property. As a Tibetan American, I'm proud to represent my country and the Asian American Pacific Islander community across the globe.
that's it from us today. Thanks to our listeners for supporting our newest project and sticking with us until the end. If you liked this episode, please share with your friends and leave us a review on whichever platform you're listening on. If you have any comments or criticism on how we can improve, please write to us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at USEMB Mongolia. And of course, if you'd like to learn about all the exchange, scholarship, and other public programs that the embassy has to offer, please visit our website at mn.usembassy.gov. Please wear masks, wash your hands, keep social distancing, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Embassy Pod.